The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, great to sink our teeth into another top flight weekend. Goals flying in everywhere, late drama, plenty of action up and down the country.
Yeah, it was great for the J-League to be back and actually got a game of the weekend correct for, I think, the first time in pod history with Yokohama versus Tokushima. So I was happy to see that. But yeah, all around a very good and exciting weekend of football.
Yes, I certainly want to give you your props for that, Sam. And yes, Yokohama FC Tokushima will be our lead match in our J1 review. But first, a little bit of housekeeping, and it's not great news for Nagoya Grampus. They are out of the ACL after a 3-0 loss away to Pohang of South Korea on Sunday afternoon. Sam, I should apologise to Grampus fans for not making a bigger deal of this game on last week's episode. As you'll probably recall, I'd forgotten when it was on. Well, it turns out that everyone involved with Grampus will want to forget it pretty quickly themselves.
Yeah, I think so, and they might want to blame me as well. I went into enemy territory on the K-League United podcast, and I was very positive about Nagoya's chances going into this game. So, yeah, kiss of death given to them. But, yeah, I wouldn't say they didn't turn up, because they had their chances to win that, but in the end, a 3-0 loss is a devastating result for them.
Yeah, and, well, at half-time, your prediction was looking pretty good, wasn't it, Sam? Because they had by far the better of the first-half chances. And, I mean, they're left to rue a couple of misses. Jakub Swierczuk firing over just past the half-hour. And then shortly after that, he saw a shot saved. And Sho Inagaki was unable to firstly bundle in his follow-up and then saw his shot a second attempt blocked at point-blank range. And I guess from there, once they conceded a scrappy goal early on in the second half, I guess the writing was on the wall and they weren't really able to rouse themselves after that.
Yeah, that seems to be the way with Nagoya on occasion. If they fall behind, they don't necessarily have it in them to then go on and take the game to the opposition. They proved that wrong against Daegu in the previous round when they went behind early and had no choice. But in this one, yeah, there was no real response from them. Pohang absolutely dominated the second half and we were fully deserving of the second goal that came and the final one. And there were two terrific strikes and not much Langrat could do about it. But Nagoya, yeah, there was just no real fight, no real spark from them after they conceded the first goal.
All right, and obviously they're well and truly in the hunt to return to the ACL in 2022, Sam. They're still in the Emperor's Cup, of course, and they're still right in there in the thick of things in the battle for third spot. So, I don't know, you think they'll be able to take some valuable lessons from their experience in the competition this year that might stand them in a slightly better stead if they do happen to make it into next year's edition as well?
To a degree. I mean, this was a weird ACL, wasn't it? And the group stage, besides Pohang, the other competitors in that group were not at their strongest. They weren't the usual calibre of team you might expect to face in the ACL. So I don't know how much they can take from that. The Daegu game, they showed a good response against a decent enough team. But I mean, this one, maybe they have to be a little bit more streetwise when they fall behind. Maybe have to think of a way of winning a one-off tie rather than, yeah, normally in an ACL you'd have the second leg to kind of get back in this. You might be able to keep it tighter at one and only lose 1-0. So maybe there are things to work on. I think their problem in this game, I thought, was in midfield. They weren't able to play Yonemoto or Nagasawa, and playing Kimoto in there with Inagaki, they just allowed Inagaki to go forward but really lost what he brings in front of the defence, and they left themselves far too open in that second half. So yeah, they've got to think of ways to deal with that, but it will be a good learning experience, and hopefully for them they've got two cracks at getting back into it, and it'll be good to see them have another go next season.
Yeah, fair enough. So commiserations to Grampus supporters. But yes, it's far from a lost season. As we said, you're still in the race for third. Obviously, they've made it through to their first ever Levain Cup final. That's coming up in about a week and a half's time. And then, yes, they're still in the Emperor's Cup as well. So still an opportunity for silverware and indeed a return to the ACL in 2022. In the other East Zone semi-final, Ulsan beat Junbuk after extra time with an absolutely cracking winner in that game as well. So it'll be Pohang and Ulsan for the right to represent East Zone in the ACL final. All right then, back to domestic matters, and J1 resumed after the international break with the 7 games from match day 32. Of course, the other 3 involving the ACL knockout stage clubs were already played in late September. And as we said at the tail end of last week's episode, every game had something riding on it, from the title race to the battle for third and an automatic ACL berth to the relegation dogfight. And while there was late drama galore higher up the table, yes, we're going to begin at the bottom to celebrate the fact that Sam got a game of the weekend tip absolutely spot on. Yokohama FC hosted Tokushima at Mitsuzawa on Saturday evening, and in a game of the season contender, it finished 5-3 to the home side, who hauled themselves off the foot of the table in a game that had pretty much everything, inspired by a goal of the season contender from Yusuke Matsuo to open the scoring, and another imperious performance from our man Saulo Mineiro, Sam.
Yeah, he's just continuing where he's left off in recent weeks. It was a terrific performance from him, led the Lions so well. And yeah, just the thing about this game was, you can get really exciting relegation six-pointers, but often the quality is lacking. But that wasn't the case in this game. Some of the goals scored were terrific. You mentioned the Matsuo one right in off the underside of the crossbar. But yeah, Mineiro, just everything about him, the cleverness of his runs, the pace and physicality he does show. And then when he gets in front of goal, the composure he shows as well. We've seen previously he can rifle in a strike, that one that hit the post and then bounced into next week, but then in this game there was a bit of touch as well, a bit of guile to him. So yeah, he looked absolutely superb, and so did Yokohama in attacking areas. They are giving absolutely everything. They're putting themselves in a position to maybe make this great escape. And yeah, it was a terrific game. And that's not to take anything from Tokushima, because the way they fought back into this game, they showed quality themselves, scoring a couple of very good goals. So yeah, all round it was a terrific game. And I think although Tokushima lost, I think they can still take something out of it, although the 3 points are absolutely vital for Yokohama.
Yeah, most definitely. I was going to mention, yeah, the quality of the Tokushima goals. There's no question about that. Their captain, Ken Iwao, headed in from basically 12 yards out 10 minutes before halftime to reduce their deficit to 2-1. That is after Kazuki Nishia's shot was saved by Sven Brodesson. But yeah, by then they're already 2-0 down. Matsuo's opener was an absolutely terrific first-time shot from inside the D that smashed against the bar, bounced down and into the roof of the net. Then Saulo Mineiro finished off a lightning-fast counter-attack in the 20th minute and got his second in deep into first-half stoppage time with another smart finish through Naoto Kamifukumoto's legs. But then, 20 minutes into the second half, Sam, it was 3-3 after Yuki Kakita bagged a 10-minute brace. So at that point, it literally was anybody's, and you'd have to say, obviously, pulling back a 2-goal deficit, all the momentum in the game was with Tokushima. But then, what about Yuya Takagi? Come off the bench at 3-3, and 2 minutes later, smacked in a 20-yard rasper of his own.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think Tokushima would have quite known what had hit them with that. Takagi, I think, has been superb in this second half of the season. He's lost his place in the last couple of games, but timely reminder that maybe he should be starting here. Terrific run, maybe the defence backed off a little bit, but I mean, Takagi took full advantage, smashing into the top corner. No chance there for Kami Fukumoto. And yeah, another terrific goal in this game, and it just wrestled that momentum right back away from Tokushima, and it would have probably crushed their spirits to have performed, to work so hard to get back to the game at 3-3. Yeah, it was just a perfect timed goal for Yokohama.
Yeah, most definitely. And so we mentioned Kami Fukumoto there, but he must be still having sleepless nights a few days later, Sam, about his decision to race 40 yards out of his goal in the second minute of stoppage time to a ball over the top that he was never getting. Kazuma Watanabe gleefully accepted the chance to fire into an empty net from, about 40 yards out to finish off the scoring and spark wild scenes on the very rain and wind swept terraces at Mitsuzawa. And so after a result like this, of course, coupled with basically how well they've done since the Olympic break, Sam, of course, they sent shockwaves through J1, didn't they, with their win over Nagoya in the first game back. Also at home, they've, of course, beaten Gunma Osaka, and they've drawn in the last couple of weeks with Yokohama F. Marino. So we've seen what they're capable of, especially in the last couple of months. So with six games to go, and it's all to play for, they still have two more relegation six-pointers on their docket, and the rest of their games... Obviously, third-place Kobe will give them a definite game in all the way in match day 36. But, yeah, they certainly have given themselves a chance of this great escape, haven't they?
Absolutely. And the fixture list, as you mentioned there, does look fairly favourable. It's another massive game on a Saturday. I think it is against Shonan at Kanagawa Derby. Both teams will be in for that. But, yeah, of all the teams in the relegation battle, you'd say Yokohama are head and shoulders away of everyone else in terms of current form. They've got the quality of players that they've brought in, and they've got the confidence. So it's still a fairly tough task. What are they, 4 points off safety, still two or three teams to get above. But, I mean, you can't write off a team playing as well as they are. And, beat Shonan, I think they'll be... Yeah, right favourites, I think, to get out of this relegation battle.
Yeah, it's absolutely remarkable. And, of course, we're rapt to see Matsuo back and banging. And, Saulo Monero's impact has been absolutely terrific. And, they'll be hoping to keep it going. They're now out of the cellar, as I mentioned earlier, up to 19th. But, only 4 points behind Tokushima, who are, of course, in the first safe spot in the table in 16th. At Vortis, now just a point ahead of Shonan, whose result we'll be coming on to shortly. And Vortis are now just 2 points clear of Oita, where we're heading next. Trinitas hosted Sendai in the only game on Sunday, and it was a monumental one in the dogfight as a quick-fire second-half brace from Arata Watanabe. His first league goals since the opening day of the season were enough to see off a feeble Vegalta side who, replaced Yokohama FC at the foot of the table. I guess, Sam, they had a right to feel aggrieved about the penalty that led to the second goal here. We can certainly discuss our thoughts on that decision. But apart from that, they appeared to be pretty dreadful again, and they almost looked resigned to their fate now.
Yeah, it did look that way. There was no real fight from them. There was no real energy towards their performance. The only team that looked like winning this were Oita. The penalty is... one of the weirdest ones I've seen. It was I didn't really know why it was given to start with, but Machida runs in towards Slovic, who then kind of puts his arm out, and maybe he shouldn't put his arm out, and kind of Machida runs into it and then goes down. And I don't know. I was wondering what your thoughts on that were, because it looked very soft to me, and one of the stranger decisions I've seen, but I guess he pulls his arm up and pulls it slightly into Machida, but a weird one. But it didn't really matter in the end. They were 1-0 down at the time, and at no point did Sendai look like they were going to score in this game.
Yeah, I thought it was harsh. Probably a lot to do with the fact that I really like Jakub Slovic as a goalkeeper, and I don't necessarily think he has a malicious bone in his body. And I mean, especially in this era of social distancing, Sam. I mean, Machida surely has to respect Slovic's personal space. But, basically the ball's back passed back to Slovic, who hoofs it up the pitch. But, so Machida jumps across Slovic, basically, to try and obviously block his clearance. And, I mean, from the replay, it looks to me that Slovic follows the flight of the ball. But, does kind of, as he follows through, kind of does leave his left arm out. And... whether Machida runs into that or whether he does slightly bring it forward to make contact with Machida, it was a puzzling one, and certainly the sort of decision that you really would hate to be on the receiving end of. The referee, although as the ball was heading up the pitch, he didn't appear to me to be looking at the incident, but he was straight into his whistle, and he pointed straight to the spot. So Yeah, a tough one for Sendai to take. But as you say, yeah, they really just didn't look like it at all here. And having sunk to the foot of the table with just one win in their last 16 league games, indeed they have only won once since late May, it just about looks curtains for Sendai, especially when two of their next three fixtures are against Kobe and Nagoya, who currently sit third and fourth in the table and are obviously scrapping for an automatic ACL spot. So by the time they host Shonan in match day 36, I mean, it could just about be curtains for them already, the way that Oita and Yokohama FC looked this weekend. There's obviously still a few league games to be played before then. But, yeah, it does look very, very grim indeed for Sendai. And, well, slightly higher up the table, Sam, it also looks pretty ropey for Shimizu S-Pulse, doesn't it? They hosted Kashiwa at Nihon Daira on Saturday, but it was the Kashiwa fullback Hiromu Mitsumaru who scored his first ever J1 goal with a terrific first-time finish 8 minutes into the second half, and that was the difference between the sides. And this win all but guarantees that Kashiwa will be playing J1 football next season. They're now 9 points clear of a 17th placed Shonan. Shimizu are still looking over their shoulders, just 4 points outside the drop zone for them. Benjamin Kololi had a very action-packed cameo after coming on in the second half, and he thought he had volleyed S-Pulse level with just over 10 minutes left, but was inches offside when a long ball was headed on at the near post. So, I mean, S-Pulse, they do have two wins in their last four, Sam, but they also have thrown in a number of very flat-looking performances in recent times. Kololi definitely did give them a spark here, at least from what I saw from the highlights, but I don't think they can have too many complaints about this defeat, and, yeah, they're still definitely looking over their shoulders.
Yeah, definitely. I thought Kashiwa, as you said, were the better side for most of this game, up until maybe the final 15. They controlled it, and that was kind of shown in the way they scored their goal. It was a wonderful move across the pitch, swept over to Mitsumaru, and it's a terrific strike. And yeah, Kashiwa would be slightly disappointed they didn't make that 2 or 3 before this final 15. I thought when Cavalli came on, he, as you said, he was very involved. And when you've got him, Santana, and Carlinhos, there are good options up there. And I think they've got some horrible fixtures, as you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, but they have the players that are capable of scoring if they're allowed to and if they have to, and they'll be forced into attacking a little bit more as this season goes on, I'm sure. And Santana, Carlinhos, Kololi, I think there's enough about them to get a few goals and just about keep themselves above water. But yeah, defensively they're a bit of a mess, and this one midfield, they had Matsuoka out suspended, and without him, I mean, it was a pretty vacant in that area. And good news for Frontale supporters, as Matsuoka is away with the Japan under-23s next weekend, so another large gap for them to work in next weekend. So, but yeah, so disappointed on that, but I still think there's just about enough going forward for Shimizu, as long as they are allowed to express themselves under Lotina, which isn't always the case.
No, that is definitely the case. But yeah, I think we can agree now that that Kashiwa have done just enough. They're not quite to the magical 40-point mark yet, Sam, but as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, that might not be necessary. And I think, with the breathing room they have at the moment and, the traffic that would have to climb above them, I think we can just about draw the line under them and, consider them safe and pencil them in for 2022.
I think so. I mean, that probably cursed them to a massive collapse now. But yeah, I don't see enough. Shonan, what are they, 9 points adrift of them, having to climb over four teams to get to them? I don't see that happening. I think Kashiwa are good enough to get another win or two to end this season. And I mean, that's good for them. They can kind of concentrate now on next season. I think there's a major rebuild that needs to and get raced all after, they've had a kind of turbulent season. But I'm obviously a neutral in this, but I always like watching Kashiwa race. I always want them in J1. So I think, I'm quite happy to see them survive if they do indeed survive.
Yeah, fair enough. So hopefully for Racehall supporters, yeah, we haven't given you the kiss of death there, but yeah, they do look in decent enough form, and just ticking over the points that they'll need to guarantee top flight football next season. So then next to the two games that bridged the dogfight and the hunt for third spot, we'll head to Tosu and the game that began the weekend's festivities on Saturday afternoon, visiting Shawnun, who we've mentioned several times already, and who had much more on the line here as they looked to pull out of the bottom four. Took an 18th minute lead through a Shuto Machino's fine finish at Park Ilgu's near post. That was less than a minute after he had curled a free kick from 25 yards and narrowly wide. But 17 minutes from time, Noriyoshi Sakai turned in Ryohei Shirasaki's ball across the 6-yard box to earn hosts Sagan a point and frustrate Shonan again. I think they're bottom of the form table now. They've only taken 2 points from the last 5 games, and even Sendai have done better than that. So Tosu stayed seventh in the table, 8 points behind Kobe in third, but as they've only taken 2 points themselves from the last 12 available, I think they're cooked, and they almost certainly don't want to be in the ACL anyway, do they, Sam? But as we said earlier, Shonan edged to within a point of Tokushima, and while their form obviously it doesn't really stack up in terms of the number of points they've earned over the last 5 games, Sam, I still contend that they're good enough to make it out of the drop zone. And, I mean, with the fixtures they've got left, including 3 dogfight 6-pointers, well, if they're not good enough to win them, then they don't deserve to stay up anyway, do they?
No, that's right. And I would agree with you, there is enough in this squad to get out of it. I think they always keep themselves in games. They're never blown away in any of these ones, but maybe lack that killer instinct to go 2 or 3-0 up when they are on top, as they were for about 60 minutes in this game. I thought they were the better side, but maybe if they get Tarik El-Yunusi back, maybe that will help with that. But I think the games are massive for them. Yokohama FC on Saturday, as we've mentioned before, is an absolutely crucial one. If they can win that, obviously it kind of cuts Yokohama FC's momentum, because at the moment I think many people would have them potentially leaping over Shonan, so that would be big for them, and it might get them out of the relegation zone as well. I think at the moment I'm just on the side of them staying in the relegation zone, but I do agree with you. I think with Okamoto and Hata on the sides, and then you've got Wellington's a good enough striker in this situation. You can just launch the ball into him and he can make something of it. So they have the options and they have the players that could can get them out of it. But yeah, those crucial games with the teams around them are going to define their season. And Shonan at this stage, they usually find a way to get through. So maybe that'll be the case again.
Yeah, most definitely. And I tell you what, Sam, I've mentioned there that Shonan still have 3 relegation dogfight 6-pointers to play, but of course they travel to Gunma Osaka on the final day of the season, and I wasn't including that one, but Gunma are obviously still far from safe themselves, so it could all come down to that final day if Gunma don't buck up their ideas. So there might actually be 4 of their final 6 for Shonan that are a dogfight 6-pointers. We will move on to Gunma next, Sam, and we can prognosticate about their chances of survival. I mean, they're 3 points behind Racehall, but they're only 6 points outside the drop zone. So, yes, not too much breathing room, especially when, the likes of Oita and Yokohama FC are bubbling up behind Shonan as well. So Gunma travelled to Saitama Stadium to face Urawa after a goalless first half that did feature a number of chances. Takashi Usami and Yuichi Hirano shot narrowly wide at either end early in the second half, but all the drama came very late on. Gunma defender Shinya Suganuma slid in to block Ataru Esaka's cross at very close range with a raised arm in the 86th minute. Play was allowed to continue, but at the next stoppage, the VAR had the referee come over and check. The penalty was awarded and finally slotted home by Esaka in the first minute of stoppage time, but then literally a minute after Esaka stuck away his spot kick, Gumba pumped the ball forward. The substitute, Patrick, helped it on straight into Reds defender Takuya Iwanami, who was caught off guard and couldn't really do anything but handle the ball. The referee pointed straight to the spot on this occasion, and Patrick drove home just out of Shusaku Nishikawa's reach. So there was a later drama, Sam, with a couple of missed chances for Reds. But these two penalty decisions, it's pretty harsh on Suganuma, isn't it? But, I mean, once, as we've seen from experience this season, once the VAR asks the referee over for a look, it's almost always bad news for the defending team, isn't it?
Well, it was, but I don't know what VAR's looking at. It doesn't know the rules, because that hits it. Hits Suganuma on the thigh before it hits him on the arm, and it's from such close range, it can never be a penalty, and I think it's a terrible decision. I don't know why it's not been spotted by either the VAR or from the referee, because they slow it down, and it definitely clips the thigh, so I think that's a whole... even if it hits him on the hand, I think it's really harsh to give it from such a close distance, but once it deflects first and then onto his hand, there's no way that should be a penalty. So I thought that was a terrible decision, and then initially I thought at the other end, oh, he's just evened it up, because he thinks, oh, I've got that wrong. But I suppose Iwanami, he kind of catches it. He almost catches it with his hands out. So it's unfortunate for him. But I thought the Gamba one was a penalty, and I thought the Urawa one was a really poor decision.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, we didn't discuss that in the green room. Sounds like I should have broken out the jingle. But it was brutally harsh on Suganuma. But as you say, I must admit, I didn't watch it that many times, so I missed the ball deflecting off his thigh. So that is, a cruel one for Suganuma and Gumba to take. But, well, it could have been worse, and they might have left with nothing after equalising deep into stoppage time themselves. Right at the death, Yoshio Koizumi drew a flying save out of Masaaki Higashiguchi with a blast from distance. And on the next passage of play after Reds regained possession, Tatsuya Tanaka shot straight at Masaaki Higashiguchi from 6 yards in the 97th minute. So I guess at the end of the day, Gumba will have breathed a sigh of relief at full time, Sam, and you're very happy to have left with a point. But just one win in goodness knows how many games it is for Gumba. They could have really done with doing one over their old enemy here. But I don't know, looking at their fixture list, do you think they've got just enough about them to stay out of real trouble?
It's a tough fixture list. I think Tosu at the weekend, it might be the ideal game, because Tosu probably don't have too much to play for. But other than that, every game is difficult. They've got to play Marinos, Nagoya, Frontale. And it's all tough teams at the top. And then they've got those relegation battles with Oita and Shonan that you mentioned. So they're all massive games. I think this game is crucial at the weekend. Win that, and I think, probably they're all right. But lose that one, I think they're in real trouble. They've got some horrible fixtures. So I think they're still just about enough with that 6-point gap. But, I think they could be dragged into it for a bit of a nervy end to the season.
Yeah, okay, so we've basically proclaimed Kashiwa safe in 13th on 37 points. So just before we move properly up the table, Gumba are 14th on 34, Shimizu 15th on 32, and Tokushima are safe on 29. But all three of those teams have a far inferior goal difference to Shonan, who are 17th on 28 points. Shonan's is far and away the best of the goal differences amongst the bottom seven, and whether that will count for anything at the end of the season obviously remains to be seen. Below Shonan, a point below them are Oita on 27, then Yokohama FC have 25, and it should be said both Oita and Yokohama FC have both won their last two league games, with Sendai now propping up the table on 23 points, a full 6 points, and factor in as well. 8 goals of goal difference behind Tokushima. So that's the situation at the bottom. And as we'll come on to when we look ahead to match day 33, yes, there are 2 huge relegation six-pointers on the slate, and we'll talk about them in more detail. But, yeah, as we work our way up the table then, Sam, Tosu are basically out of the ACL hunt. We've written them off a few weeks ago. They're 7th on 52 points. Kashima, of course, didn't play this weekend. Their fixture was played at the end of September. They have 53 points. And what of Reds then? So they obviously lost a lead that they'd taken in the first minute of second half stoppage time against Gumba here, and then have blown a chance to win it right at the death. I'm obviously not blaming Koizumi. That was a fine save from Higashiguchi, but a little bit more composure from Tanaka, and he could have been the hero for Reds in the 97th minute. Obviously, they still have a lot of interest in this battle for third, but they're now 5 points behind Kobe. This is effectively 2 points dropped for them, not 1 gained, and their goal difference, while we're mentioning it, is far inferior to Kobe's. So whether that's basically worth an extra point to Vissel. It'll be a frustrating one for Reds to take, and I guess it does deal a bit of a blow to their ACL chances, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is a disappointing result. It was a game where I thought they were well on top, but they faced a goalkeeper that was in inspired form in Higashiguchi, and then when the golden chance came, they didn't take it. And it's been a really poor month for them. After September, it looked quite positive. They were getting themselves right in this ACL hunt, but that loss at the start of the month to Kobe, and then what happened in the Levain Cup, where they were pretty weak, I thought, in the 2 performances, then Cerezo got past them. So, yeah, they're kind of fading, I think, at the wrong time. And maybe that was to be expected, I suppose. They're getting used to Rodriguez for the first time this season. There's a lot more energy in the way they have to play than under previous managers, so maybe that's just catching up with them slightly. There's still enough quality in the side, and there's still time for them maybe to try and get Isaka and Junker and Koizumi to work together. And if they can click, then it could be magical for them. But yeah, maybe it's just they're just faltering at the wrong time. And I think maybe 5 points behind Kobe, with 6 with that goal difference, I think it might just be a bit too much for them.
Yeah, all right then. So, of course, Grampus were in ACL action over this weekend, so they didn't play in J1. Their match day 32 fixture was also played the end of September. So they have 57 points, and so now well and truly clear in third by 3 points and 10 goals of a goal difference are Vissel Kobe. But yes, we mentioned late drama towards the top of the table. There were certainly some at Saitama Stadium that we've just mentioned, and also at the Neuwir Stadium when Vissel hosted Avispa Fukuoka, who are now basically just playing out the string. Had a decent number of chances themselves here, but it was finally settled for Kobe. I guess when it looked like it was going to be another one of those days for them, Sam, when they had a golden opportunity, it looked like they weren't going to take it. I mean, they did have a number of chances. Andres Iniesta was inches wide with a first-time shot from inside the D just past the hour. There was a couple of chances for Yoshinori Muto as well. But yes, finally, with 4 minutes to go, Rio Hatsuse got to the byline down the left and dug out across to the back post. One of your favourites, Douglas, rose above his marker to head down and just out of Masaaki Murakami's reach in the 86th minute to spark wild scenes on the terraces at the Neuwir. And a win like this surely will give them a lot of confidence for some of the big games they've got going forward.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously it's not certain that they're going to make it, but this season these victories have become much more regular. In other years they might have even gone down 1-0 in this sort of game, but they fought till the end, and I was really happy for Douglas. Obviously, he'd been one of my favourite players. He's now found himself like 5th in the pecking order at Kobe up front, and well, I mean, to have a player of that quality as kind of 5th choice option is still fantastic, and he came up with the goods. It was a really well taken header, and Yeah, it was just Kobe kept plugging away. It was a stubborn Avispa performance. They were defensively very solid, as they have been all season. But yeah, it's a really good sign for a team going for an ACL spot if they can keep going and score a late goal. And they probably did deserve it on the balance of play. It wasn't a vintage performance. It wasn't the greatest game in the world, but a crucial 3 points for Kobe keeps them ahead of Nagoya, with Nagoya not playing. And we've spoken about big games at the bottom coming up this weekend. Kobe versus Nagoya might even top those in terms of importance at the top of the table.
Yeah, it's a fascinating-looking weekend coming up, match day 33. And, we will talk about all of the big games to come this coming weekend very shortly. But, as we work our way from bottom to top in this week's episode, all of a sudden, here we are. I think we're at record time as well, Sam. Here we are with the final game of the seven played over the weekend, and it was the second-placed Yokohama F. Marinos who looked to, how much pressure they're building from coming from 12 points behind is up for debate. But, yes, they had to take care of business at home against Sapporo to close the gap to Kawasaki to 9 points, and they themselves left it late as well. A terrific goal from Daiki Suga caught out Yohei Takaoka at his near post to give visitors Consadole a 24th minute lead, although I don't know if it was directly from the training ground, Sam, because it was a short corner routine, but Suga actually looked quite surprised that Takaro Kaneko actually played it to him in the first place, but he adjusted himself and blasted in at Takaoka's near post. Certainly not one that Takaoka would want to see back too many times, but a lovely strike from Suga that kissed the inside of his near post as it flashed in to the goal. And were they really banging down the door here, Sam? I mean, the highlights don't really suggest that, but I mean, the shot stats were that was nearly up to 20 shots apiece for these teams. It was raining shots here, there, and everywhere. Whether they were of the best quality or not, I mean, Chanatip missed a very good chance for Sapporo to make it 2-0, didn't he? And then I guess F. Marinos, they just got their reward for keeping on going as they want to do. They're they're very good at wearing sides down and scoring late goals themselves, and they were able to turn it around in the last, the last 10 minutes through goals from Kenyu Sugimoto and the Golden Boot leader, Daizen Maeda.
Yeah, I think you've got to give credit for them to keep going, because for a lot of this game, I thought Sapporo were much the better team. They completely dominated in midfield. You kind of know what you're going to get with a Misha Petrovic's side, with the two holding midfielders, the two attacking midfielders, and then Ogashiwa, who drops in as well. So at times it was like 5-on-2 in that area. So yeah, it was very much Sapporo in control, and Marcos Jr. didn't really offer too much, but it was kind of when they brought Amano back in, they kind of regained a little bit of control in there, and he was at the heart of the final goal. The battling that he did, it kind of caught Sapporo out a little bit. They were flat-footed, and Maeda, he got on the end of the cross. And yeah, it was another substitute in Elbert that got the two subs in Elbert and Sugimoto that combined for the equaliser. So it was good that they had those good options off the bench and they kept going. But generally it was a disappointing performance from Marinos. It was arguably the worst I've seen them under Kevin Muscat. It kind of looked like Kevin Muscat had taken over rather than previously, when it's just been a continuation of Postecoglou. They went with too many long balls. It was a bit disjointed, but yeah, they got their act together, and it was kind of much more like the F. Marinos that we know in the final 10 or 15 minutes, and they got the rewards from that. But Sapporo, it just kind of sums up Sapporo in that on their day, they can be better than almost anyone in this league, and they can get victories, but they just don't always take all their chances. With Ogashiwa up front, he's a good player, but he's not a clinical striker. But when they want the strikers on, they had Bothroyd and Douglas Oliveira and Milan Tucic come on, but then they completely lose their style of play, and they don't really build up very well. So they're in this kind of quandary at the moment where they can't, if they want to play really good football, they're going to miss chances, and if they want to score goals, they have to play terrible football. So things to work on for them, but generally a decent performance from Sapporo. But yeah, Marinos just maybe showed their class towards the end.
Yeah, they've been kind of just flapping around in mid-table for seemingly most of this season, I guess, haven't they, Sapporo? But yeah, they are capable of turning on a really good performance here and there. And, I mean, yeah, by the looks of what I saw, I mean, they would have been fairly decent value for their win had they been able to hang on. But, yeah, as you say, a credit to F. Marinos for keeping on going and, scoring two good goals late on. Sugimoto's, come off the bench to head them level. And then, Maeda's 18th goal of a terrific season. As you say, Sam, excellent from Amano to, recover the ball after his initial cross was blocked, nutmeg his man, and then, play the ball across the box for, I think, as you've mentioned a couple of times in recent weeks, a typical F. Marinos goal, a player arriving in the centre to basically tap home. An excellent passage of play. So well done to F. Marinos. Yes, they've managed to reduce the gap to 9 points and keep it interesting heading into match day 33. And, this is, it's just got loads going for it, hasn't it, Sam? It all gets going on Friday night with Urawa hosting Kashiwa. And then, the five games on Saturday are highlighted by two relegation dogfight blockbusters at 2 p.m. 16th placed Tokushima host Oita, who are 18th, 2 points below them. And then at 3 p.m. 17th placed Shonan host second from bottom Yokohama FC in a Kanagawa derby. And, amongst other things this weekend, Sam, it's amazing to think that by Saturday tea time, Oita Trinita could be out of the bottom four.
I don't know if I can quite believe that, to be honest. That would be some turnaround. I think we've relegated them about six times this season. But, fair play to them. They're still in it. And I can't completely rule it out. They could beat Tokushima and Yokohama could beat Shonan. It'd be great for a neutral to have it so bunched up if those results do happen. But, just these fixtures at this time of the season, the relegation dogfight is always my favourite part of the league, and this Saturday looks a terrific set of fixtures for that, and I'm expecting two really exciting games.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Unfortunately, they're not perfectly spaced out, so you can't watch them both, but if you've got an extra screen or three like Sam has, then you might be able to have them both on at the same time. You definitely give the first half of the Tokushima Oita game your full attention, and then with one eye on that game in the second half, you can check out the first half of Shonan Yokohama FC. So apologies to the supporters of the teams in the other three games on Saturday, but there's no question where most eyes will be on that day. And then Sunday's four fixtures are very top-heavy with the standout, the battle that Sam's mentioned earlier, the battle for third spot when incumbents Kobe travel to fourth-placed Nagoya. F. Marinos travel to Cerezo Osaka in the late game and will be praying for help from Shimizu when they travel to Kawasaki at 5 p.m. But, Espols themselves will certainly be sweating through Saturday's games, Sam. They'll be watching from behind the couch, I'm sure, as any combination of results basically from the four teams directly below them. And, it's not going to be great watching for Latina and everybody involved with Espols, is it?
No, they could find themselves, 1 point above the relegation zone in the worst case scenario, then facing Kawasaki away, so that's not an ideal situation to be in. But I mean, if they are in that position, it might force them to come out and try and win that game, so it might be ideal for F. Marinos if Shimizu are really motivated and having to try and go to Todoroki and get a result. So that it's quite interesting the way that those fixtures are spread out. I think I always don't like it when you're going for a title and it's spread out in that way, and Marinos know what's happened. They could find themselves 12 points adrift going into their game with Cerezo, and how that might affect them, you don't know. You might, heads might drop if that's the case, or they might be galvanised if it goes the other way. So it's still an interesting Sunday, but I think that Nagoya-Kobe game is the most important. I think if Kobe beat Nagoya and get themselves 6 points clear of them with, five games to go, I think that might almost settling that third place position.
Yes, indeed. So if I had to nail you down, I guess I can let you have two picks, can't I, Sam, because of the games on Saturday and on Sunday that we've mentioned. So it's hard to pick. It's like choosing between your kids. But Tokushima Oita or Shonan Yokohama FC, if an international viewer or a neutral has only got time to sit down for 2 hours and watch one of those games, which one do you think would be the best spectacle on Saturday?
I think I'd have to go Shonan versus Yokohama. It's got that added element of a derby. It's not maybe the feistiest derby in the world, but it adds a little bit to it. Both teams, both teams have got good quality. I think Oita are probably the weakest of the four that are involved in these games and the least interesting to watch. And I will never pick Shunagasawa as a player to watch in this. So, yeah, Shonan Yokohama. And it brings me closer to beating Scott McIntyre if Yokohama get the 3 points here. So that's definitely the game I'd pick on Saturday.
Yeah, fair enough. I fully concur there. And I guess it can't be anything else than Nagoya Kobe on Sunday, right?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they're all going to be interesting games. And even the Sapporo Avispa game, Sapporo very rarely let you down with the early kickoff. But it's got to be Nagoya Kobe. It's a vital game for Nagoya. And for the rest of the league, actually, there's going to be a lot of teams, Raro and Kashima, plumping for Nagoya and hoping that they can drag Kobe back into this. And as a neutral, I'm nothing against Kobe, but I'd quite like a Nagoya win here just to set up a really exciting end to the season.
Yeah, fair enough then. So, it promises to be a terrific weekend. As we said, getting started on Friday night with Reds hosting Reysol, and all the way through to Sunday evening as Cerezo and Yokohama F. Marino. So lots on the line again at both ends of the table this coming weekend with all 20 top flight teams back in action. The following weekend, of course, the league pauses for the Levain Cup final between Nagoya and Cerezo Osaka. But then there's a national holiday the following Wednesday, the 3rd of November, when there is a full round of fixtures. That will be match day 34. So, no rest for the wicked. And, it's the end of the season fast approaching with so much to play for. All right, well, we most definitely have set a new J-Talk Big Pod record here, I think, Sam, by getting through all seven games in just over 40 minutes by my calculations, or 45 minutes. So absolutely terrific there. Now, I should let you know, you won't know this, but you've actually dropped out a few times for a second or two throughout the recording. So, but then your audio has sort of kind of caught up with itself. So the people that are listening on 1.5 or 2 speed, 2 times speed, have probably had to listen to you quite a number of times when your voice has gone extra fast. So I hope it hasn't been too disconcerting for them. And obviously, it's not your fault. It's the fault of our Skype connection on the Tuesday night, probably paying the price for not recording on Monday night. But extra short pod. But so much fascinating action on the pitch over the weekend. And I obviously FC Tokyo don't have anything to play for now. So I just can't wait to see what's going to happen at either end of the table this coming weekend.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And apologies for anyone that if my connection hasn't been great. I don't know exactly what I've done wrong. Maybe I'll have to sort something out. But sorry about that. But we've got a really exciting weekend to look forward to at both ends. And maybe FC Tokyo's game might be an interesting one for the neutral. You never know.
Well, pigs might fly, Sam. We shall see. Unfortunately, Leandro won't be around, obviously, to face his former team, Kashima. But, I didn't really want to have an FC Tokyo mention on this week's podcast. So we'll knock that on the head there, and we will leave it for this week. Look forward to speaking to you again next week, Sam. I'm sure it's going to be a bumper episode after yet another bumper J1 weekend.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Speak to you next week.
All right, then. So that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved to get early access to all of our podcasts, both Big Pod and Extra Time, amongst other benefits here and there, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And, of course, we'd like to thank you listeners for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up up J1 Match Day 33. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.